Hi, and welcome to the Changing Perspectives Podcast, the show where we discuss a variety of topics, including grief, parenting, health and wellness, and relationships. Join us and explore a number of changing perspectives. We're your hosts, Jenny and Josh Brennan. Hey, Jenny.
Hi.
What's happening?
Not much.
Just another day.
Just another long day.
Crazy day.
Crazy day.
Where I was dad the Uber.
You were dad the Uber, mm-hmm. And were you a coach tonight too?
Yep.
Coach.
Yep. Uber, coach, professional, back and forth. I had to answer a work call. It was one of those days.
Yes, but then we got to end the night. I don't want to say but that was bad. That's all fantastic. And yes. And we get to end the day today with like a really cool new thing that we've done for the podcast that is I'm super excited about.
So excited. So this is episode 18, and we had the distinct, amazing pleasure of having our very first Changing Perspectives interview.
Yes, we've been, well, I guess I have been, because I'm the social media presence. That's kind of my job, my role.
Listen, I run the Dizzy Bird Studios account. They're not even as...
I wasn't.
As popular or as cool as yours, but I still run those.
It wasn't a competition.
It wasn't?
No, it wasn't. Lots of other things are, but that wasn't.
Okay.
But we've been having some discussions with a variety of different folks in scheduling interviews. And we've had a little bit of technical issues. Took us a little bit of time to figure out the best way to record it, but we figured it out.
I still have headache from that, I think.
And so tonight we had our first interview with a guest. And so it went amazingly well. We've got more lined up in the next couple of weeks. So this will be something that we regularly do so that you don't just have to listen to the two of us jabber on and on. We are also bringing on other folks. So coming up, we have some folks coming on to talk about, I didn't put my notes in front of me. We have one coming on who's going to talk about parenting adolescents. Yes. Which I'm super excited about since I'm parenting adolescents.
Are they going to teach us how to parent adolescents?
Yeah. Really talk about some of the important concepts there. Someone talking about anxiety and managing anxiety. We also are talking with some folks to come on and provide some education about CBD oil, which is really, you know, so here in Massachusetts, taken off everywhere. And I have to say, I don't know a lot about it. And so
neither do you.
No. So, so if you're listening and you're interested in exploring potentially coming on, definitely go ahead and reach out.
Yeah.
The challenge is finding a time when Josh and I are available in the same location and it works with whoever we're interviewing, but we made it work tonight. So we are going to, play that interview for you.
Yes. So we'd like to introduce everybody to Melissa Unfred, who is a funeral service professional, death care professional, but what she goes by is mortician.
Right. So we don't want to give it away.
No, we don't want to give it away, but that's who you're going to hear in just a moment. And if you want to follow along, if you're at a place where you're not driving or whatnot, you can check out themodernmortician.com. Check out her website as you listen to her talk and go through our questions. And she's going to teach you all about her companion, Kermit.
Yeah. And then stay tuned after the interview, because we will sort of debrief our thoughts on the interview.
All right, so without further ado, here's Melissa. All right, Changing Perspectives fans, we have such a great treat for you today. We're so very excited to have with us Melissa Unfred, otherwise known as the Modern Mortician. Hi, Melissa.
Hello, how are y'all?
Good. Excellent. Oh, I love that you say y'all. Sometimes I say that and my friends laugh at me because I'm not from Texas like you.
They're like, no, that's not going to work, Jenny. You can't use that word.
I can't use that. So, Melissa, we're so excited for you to be with us today. I think that I stumbled across your profile on Instagram probably when I was doing some research for our podcast episode on funeral directors, and fell in love with your profile. You have like an insane amount of followers, and you have this really great kind of refreshing view on kind of death and funeral services. And so I was so excited when you responded, when I reached out to you. And we're going to just sort of talk about what you do, and also your dog, Kermit the dog, who's also a very kind of special dog in the industry. So thank you so much for being with us today.
I'm excited to do this. I enjoy opportunities to be able to share more about death.
But yes, I totally hear you. I hear you. And I think sort of the first thing that I wanted to talk about was your use of the word mortician. I know on your website, you say pretty early on in your sort of like about you section that you really want folks to call you a mortician. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So, when I went to mortuary school, there's two programs you can do. Just a funeral director certificate program, or you can go for the, depending on the state, the Associates of Applied Science, which is a associate's degree, or the bachelor's, mm-hmm. For mortuary science. And in Texas, it's an associate's degree. And so I did the entire program. And I prefer to be called a mortician because I think it's like hearkening back on the past, but that it's also making it more, you know, in the present day. Mm-hmm. I'm not just a funeral director. I'm not a party planner. I am an undertaker in the sense that I'm undertaking these tasks, but really mortician kind of encompasses everything in one. And mortician kind of sounds almost like an educator to me. That's kind of why I prefer to use that term.
I like that.
That's really cool.
I was teaching at a funeral science program. I was doing all their bereavement and grief courses, and the program actually, uh-huh. the entire college sort of shut down. But so I am going to probably slip and fall into funeral director using that language, but I'm going to try really hard to use that mortician term because I like that. I like what you just said about that. And I like kind of that combination of hearkening to the past, but also connecting it to the present. And I kind of think that's pretty symbolic of our conversations about death in general, because there were times in our past, sort of as a species, a human race, where we were a little more open in talking about death. And it'd be nice to kind of bring that into the present. So Melissa, the mortician, is on with us. So that's exciting.
That's very cool. Melissa, can you tell us, are you sort of rare in calling yourself a mortician, or are there other morticians that you know of?
I believe there's a surgence of the term starting to be used. It's more, I've seen it in the more alternative death care space. There's another female on the East West Coast that goes by the Ask a Mortician. And, I can't think of anybody else. Oh, there's a man that goes by the Maverick Mortician. So. Mm. We're stepping out there.
yeah, I like it. You're cutting edge here. You're trendy.
So, yeah. Melissa, tell us a little bit about how you got started. Like, what made you decide to explore this field?
It kind of goes back to right before my senior year in high school. I remember being in the kitchen. My mom was doing something, and the news was interviewing local family-owned businesses that were looking for summer help right after a plumber was a female that owned a funeral home. And my mom from the kitchen was like, oh, you should work for the funeral home, because her daughter liked to wear, you know, flannel and baggy clothes. This was the 90s.
Right.
So I cocked my eyebrow, I'm pretty sure, and I looked at her and I said, I will. And I got the job because the lady knew my grandfather. So that was my introduction into funeral care. And what made me decide to stick with it was it's ever changing. You don't have the same case twice. Mm. Literally every day is something new. It's challenging. So I was able to incorporate my artistic side and also my, you know, technical side.
That's pretty much sums up like funeral care, right? The artistic side and the helpful side.
Yeah. And, you know, that like you're not sitting in a cubicle Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, doing the same thing. It's always different. I love that that was, I love that's sort of your like origin story in the field, is that it was like the media talking about the death industry as sort of a job, and they were showcasing a female funeral home owner. So that's, I love that.
That's
way back in the 90s. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
What part of Texas
set the tone for where I was going with my career? I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's part of the reason why it's so important to have these conversations kind of in the public eye, because they can change people's lives. I mean, I know that sounds kind of dramatic, but it's true, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, what part of Texas are you in?
I am living in Austin, Texas. So I serve the central Texas area, really from kind of like Georgetown, which is Round Rock, Georgetown, all the way down to San Antonio.
Wow. Okay. All right. So really middle of Texas there.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Great.
I know very little about the geography of Texas. All I know is it's gigantic.
Oh, yeah. It's too big.
It's like 15 Massachusetts all roll into one, right?
Yeah.
So, Melissa, I really love all of your presence online, your social media accounts, your website, very well laid out. It's entertaining to sort of go through. I enjoyed, we want to sort of hold off on the Kermit story, but I will say real quick, I loved watching the Kermit video that's on your website. So very cool. And we're dog people, so it so speaks so true to us in our hearts. So, but before we did that, I'm very interested, and I don't know if you know about our backgrounds. Jenny mentioned teaching in the funeral service industry, but I'm in end-of-life care as well. I work in organ and tissue donation and have a little bit of experience. I work day-to-day with funeral directors all throughout New England. But
morticians,
yes. You have to change the vernacular. And I know very little about the topic of green burials, and you seem to be a bit of an expert in that. Can you sort of dive into that topic with us and give us sort of the basics about green burials?
Absolutely. So a green burial, or a shades of green burial, depending on, you know, what you have access to, or natural burial. These are all terms that basically mean the body is not embalmed. And something that everybody should know is embalming is not required by law. Some funeral homes are in the habit of telling families, you have to embalm to have a public viewing. You have to do this. Those are their rules. You have to realize that it's sometimes their reputation that's on the line as to how that body is perceived by the public.
Sure.
So that's something that is funeral directors are starting, or morticians are starting to embrace this change as families are starting to demand it. Mm-hmm. So it's like a lot of education and time went out to the public before funeral homes are starting to feel comfortable offering this. But a natural burial most commonly happens in a natural burial park or a conservation burial park. They are popping up in numbers all over the United States, into Canada and other places. The best thing to do to find out if there's one in your area is to check with the Green Burial Council website. They are updating their website. You can also just use Google and see what's in your area. Mm. Like here in Austin, we have Countryside Memorial in Lavernia, and it's a beautiful meadow that's got trees, and it's surrounded by those pastures with cattle to the side, and a pond. It's just amazing, and people can help dig their grave, their family member's grave, or they can have the backhoe come in and open the grave. The graves are only about 3 feet deep because all the good microbial action is in that first few feet of soil. But you could be wrapped in like a blanket or a cardboard box or a pine box. It's all about simplicity and letting nature actually take its course.
Wow.
Now, how important is it for families that you work with that want this green burial or shades of green, how important is it for them in the grieving process?
I have experienced in my career, which is about 22 years at this point, in and out of death care, the more hands-on that I see, the more family involvement, I think it facilitates the grief process. Early and most of my career was getting the family to do an embalming and then have the ceremonies and things like that. Whereas in the later part of my career, I'm encouraging families to stay at home or stay near the dead body, maybe to sponge bathe the body, spend more time with the dead before it's ushered away. That seems to me to help bring people some closure and some finality, rather than looking at a body that's been embalmed and has makeup on that might sit up and talk to you. So that's what I've noticed in my time in my career, is just people are, the more hands-on you have, I think the more it helps with those wounds. It doesn't make it any less, but it definitely helps.
I would agree with you as a grief counselor. You know, when you look at other countries and other cultures and even cultures that, you know, are not modernized, that are very sort of primitive in nature, that is for the most part what they do. They don't leave the body. They're with the body. They're with the person as they die, and then they're with them, and they don't leave that body until the body has reached its final disposition, which in some places, you know, could be like a sky burial, lots of different things. But it's really kind of this foreign view that we as sort of Americans and some European cultures take, where we should, you know, prep this body and make it look like it's alive still. You know, when you're raised in that, it feels normal and it feels like, oh, okay, this must be what is good for our grief. But when you really kind of zoom out and explore that in the context of other cultures, different religions, different worldviews, you see that, oh, maybe we have something to learn about a better way to manage our grieving process here. And maybe it starts with the body right at the point of death there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that other cultures, Jenny, you and I have talked about this before, but I think other cultures look at sort of what we do historically as kind of weird, right? Like you're in a hospital or situation or a rehab facility and the patient dies, your loved one dies, the monitors get shut off, and then you walk away or you're as a family member, you're done. Funeral home comes, picks up the body, does it. You don't see your loved one again until, Melissa, you just described, you know, in the casket, embalmed with makeup. And there's such a removal with the family from the whole process. And I think you describing the elements of green burials is a stark contrast to that. And it seems like the more natural thing.
Yeah. And, you know, it's great to know that families have the option, right? If they're open to exploring, you know, a more green burial, kind of any sort of iteration of that, it's really wonderful that they have that option available to them. So what was the name of that website or that council again? Green Burial Council, is that what you said?
Yes, greenburialcouncil.org, I believe, is the website. I'm going to confirm that real quick. Yes, greenburialcouncil.org.
Great. So folks can go there and see what's available in their area.
And I guess that kind of leads me to my next question, Melissa. How often these days are folks opting for the green burial in your practice?
Because it is more expensive, I see more families choosing cremation.
Okay.
It's maybe 1 in 10 is going to go the route of burial these days. Now we've introduced a new way of cremation in Texas. Have you heard of water cremation?
I actually,
alkaline hydrolysis.
I was going to ask you about it because I saw it, I think, on one of your either your website or Facebook page.
What's it called again?
Go ahead, Melissa.
Alkaline hydrolysis, aka water cremation. AKA Aquamation. That's a lot of names as it's developing.
It's developing, so kind of playing with what's going to sort of sound the best, what's going to sort of catch on.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So what exactly is it?
What's scientifically going to work with people, huh?
What, can you explain it a little bit?
Yeah. So water cremation is basically the reduction of the body by water and lye. It's 95% water and 5% lye, which is a sodium hydroxide and sodium potassium mix. So it's a light corrosive. I tell people it's somewhere between a spa day for your corpse and Breaking Bad.
Okay. Because that's the first thing I thought of.
That was the first thing I thought of as well, yes.
Yeah, so I just addressed that up front.
Okay. That's great. That. I love that authenticity there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
but
amazing.
What it really is, it's like taking the body, what happens in the ground in 6 months, and accelerating it into 5 hours.
Yeah.
So the body breaks down, all the tissues and proteins break down and become the liquid, which is the effluent, and it looks like what you'd see in iced tea, maybe that color of brown.
Okay.
That can be reintegrated into the agricultural community, like in Oregon, for example. They have sod farmers that come to the aquamation place and take the effluent, the liquid, and they go and fertilize the sod crops with it.
Wow.
In some states, the effluent, the liquid, goes right down the drain, but that's also considered an amazing thing because it's all pH neutral by the time the process is done, and it's considered like a nutrient protein pack for the sewer systems. Whatever that means.
Wow. So it's
but
not
like a lot of science behind it.
Wow. So it's not like a hazardous material.
Not at all.
That's
no.
Amazing.
In fact, it's sterile enough to drink, though I'm not going to be the first to try that.
No, but there are cultures around the world where that would be important to them. Not so much,
yeah.
Not as many today, and many countries have outlawed that. But if we were to dive sort of deep into other cultures, that would be an important part of their tradition there in terms
right.
of, you know, carrying on the life sort of spirit of their loved one. And I want to just sort of pause for a moment here and acknowledge for folks that are listening who might be feeling kind of horrified, right, by what you just described and what we're talking about, because it's so out of the sort of social norm, which is changing, uh-huh. but really, when you stop and think about it, this is such a much more natural process than
yeah.
the embalming process,
right?
Right. So I just want to call attention to that to our listeners who are like, what is going on? What are we listening to? to really kind of stop and think about that what Melissa just described is something that allows the body after death to really be returned to the earth in a really meaningful, safe way, which is not necessarily true of an embalming process.
Right. And something that people need to think about when embalming a body, the blood and the formaldehyde go right down into the water treatment centers or wherever. You know, wherever you flush the toilet, all of that stuff goes the same place.
I didn't think about that.
And then also, like, embalming a body can also be considered mutilation. It's a tough process.
Yeah, I think that.
Take a step back and think about
yeah.
it. It's really weird.
You
right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's like taxidermying our humans.
Yeah.
So there was a great video that I used to show in one of my classes, the culture class, where it looked at four different cultures and kind of as like, here's something crazy that this culture does. And it's, well, not crazy, but sort of outrageous or might seem outrageous. Like oh my gosh, I'm forgetting what it's actually called. But in like Taiwan, where they'll rebury the bones. They'll sort of clean the bones a few years after death, things like that. So anyways, they would move through these three different cultures. And then the fourth culture was American embalming. And they sort of presented yeah. it in that same sort of limelight. And the students would always be like, whoa, when you really think about it,
yeah.
it is kind of just as outrageous. And I'm not knocking anyone that chooses that. I'm saying, how great is
right.
it that we actually have choices? And we don't need to just do what we've always done,
the cultural norm.
Yeah, we can stop and think about and look at what our other options are and what the benefits for those might be for our grieving process, for sort of our whole culture, for our society, for our earth. We have options, and I don't think people really get that yet.
I'm a bit of a history nerd. Not that I know a lot about history, but I love history. And I don't, do either one of you, I'm looking at you, Jenny, too. Where did embalming start, or how do we start embalming?
Abe Lincoln. Abe Lincoln, when he died, he was embalmed, and it allowed there to be like the sort of the death train, the train that he was then put on a train, his body, his embalmed body was put on a train and toured really what was the country at that time. And so people were able to see his embalmed body. Wow. And then it sort of took off from there. He wasn't the first, am I correct in that understanding, Melissa?
Yes, absolutely. It got popular then, but it really kind of started in the Civil War. The father of embalming was Dr. Thomas Holmes, and he would like pump the bodies full of arsenic and different chemicals and stick them up in little caskets. And that would be like showing your wares, but on the battlefield, like look what we can do to get your bodies home.
Yeah. So it allowed the loved ones to sort of still also be able to see their body. Yeah. So it kind of grew out of that time period. And so we've been doing it ever since.
I want to go back to aquamation just for a second, because the first time I'd ever seen it or heard about it was on your website or Facebook or wherever I saw it. I think you had a picture somewhere sort of comparing the bones post cremation versus watermation. So what are the, I mean, besides the element being different, what are the main differences family-wise? I mean, there's not an urn full of liquid, I would think, or is there?
Right. No. Well, I mean, if you want to come get your loved one's liquid, I'm sure we could work that out. However, it is an urn. You can get, just like you would get cremated remains back from flame, all it is bone that has been processed into an unrecognizable form, so like ground up. There was a law enacted in the 70s that required that bones need to be pulverized. Otherwise, we'd have detectives running off on wild goose chases every time somebody decided to take grandpa's skull home from the crematory.
Right.
So, so that's kind of, you're getting 20% more of your loved one back, not because, you know, they suddenly have more mass to them. It's just with flame cremation, there's a couple things happen. The retorts are made of brick, and sometimes it's kind of a gritty material. Bone fragments get stuck in there all the time. If you have cremated remains, it's highly likely you have somebody else's grandma or grandpa in that urn with your loved one. Maybe only like 3 to 5%, but there's absolutely commingling. And then also with the water, it is 100% of your loved one in there, because it cleans out that much at the end. So since it's a more gentle process, you're getting back more that isn't destroyed or left behind.
That's so interesting.
The technology part of it is really fascinating to me. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Josh and I were talking earlier today about how we live in Massachusetts, and Massachusetts tends to be sort of viewed as this like very liberal kind of left-leaning state. And I don't necessarily think of Texas that way, and how interesting it is that, you know, there's this modern mortician who's kind of leading the way. You know, I'm talking about you here, leading the way in these sort of new methods. And I was like, what is that about Massachusetts? And I realized, I think that we're still very heavily influenced by our sort of puritanical roots here and pilgrims, you know, sort of European history there. I think we're very much tied to like tradition, like this is just the way we've always done things, we don't change. So there's like this interesting kind of cultural piece to that. I'm wondering, for you in Texas, what's the general sort of overall reaction to what you're doing?
Well, people are actually really interested. The general public is really interested in what I'm doing. It's my own professional colleagues that I seem to have the most pushback from.
Mm. Do you have any idea what that's about?
Oh, yeah.
you're changing sort of the industry.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say, you're basically sort of encouraging huge change within the industry.
Right. I feel like it's that they're comfortable where they're at.
Yeah.
A lot of the funeral professionals in my area that I've gotten to know through the state association or just different things of that nature, they seem comfortable with doing the same thing that they've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been very empathetic over my years to what families are telling me and what the general consensus is on the death care industry. And I feel it's important for us to meet the families where they want to be met, you know, mm-hmm. like not halfway, go all the way. You know,
sure.
If a family wants to do something that you've never done before, this is your profession. Do it.
Sure.
You're the death care professional.
Yeah, as long as it's within the confines of sort of the law and your parameters of your licensure, yeah, why not? I mean, it would be great for families to have that power. And if families are coming to you and asking for these things, absolutely, I wholeheartedly support that. That's probably fantastic for their grief process.
So my next question for you kind of is around that. I love the section of your website where you go through what you believe. Like, I think you have like 8 beliefs. And there's one that says, I believe the culture of silence around death should be broken. And I want to challenge you to sort of share with us what you think about how that should be done. What are your thoughts? So you mentioned innovation, scholarship. Do you tell us a little bit more about your thoughts on that?
Well, I do want to give credit where credit is due. That list of 8 things came from the Order of the Good Death website.
Okay.
Where we all feel like everybody that's in this, what they have dubbed the death positive movement, which I really feel is more of a death education movement. People that are involved in this, the scholars and everything you mentioned there, we just want to destigmatize the discussion of death. Because if you look at it this way, there's 2 guarantees that are going to happen with everybody that takes a breath on the earthly plane. You're born. And you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we ignoring the absolute obvious? If we can incorporate intelligent conversation and open, kind of pull back the veil, as I like to say, on death and dying, we're going to make it a much more normal and comfortable thing to deal with, which we're all going to deal with.
We are all going to deal with. And as the grief therapist, I also think that can change what the experience is like for folks who are grieving, because that same sort of stigma exists for when you're bereaved. And we talk about it, you know, for a wake or a funeral, and then a few weeks folks will give you casseroles and let you talk about it. But then really there's a very strong message to sort of stop talking about it. Don't make me uncomfortable. Get over it. Move on. Find closure. And if we could and pull back the veil on that too, and allow there to be space for people to really talk about death and their grief, what a wonderful thing that would be for people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And so a little bit more on the family piece, I had a question for you, Melissa, as a mortician. How important is it that your family knows your wishes, your end of life care decisions? How important is that?
Oh, I think it's incredibly important. Somebody other than you knows what you want, whether it's your family or an appointed agent or a partner. And especially if it's a partner or an appointed agent, you need to have something in writing designating them to be the person. You do not want your legal next of kin in charge. So that's something to think about too, with the way we have different families and fractured families out there now. Those are things to think about, but have the conversation. I think that's half the battle right there. If you want to make a joke of it, there's great games now that are out there. My favorite is Morbid Curiosity. It's a card game that's set up to get you to talk about death and dying.
Oh, great.
I'm writing that down. Did you say Morbid Curiosity?
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow.
Morbid Curiosity Game is the website, I believe. But yeah, those folks are from here in Austin, and she's in counseling as well, and he's an educator. And they created this amazing tool that I think more people should be aware of. There's other ones out there, too, that I'm just not thinking off the top of my head. But engaging in death cafes. That's another thing that people could do is, you know, just if you want to get comfortable talking about it in front of strangers, go to a local death cafe.
Yeah.
That sounds like it's so very important, and it mitigates the family, the tough family dynamics, right? If there's
absolutely,
you know, nothing known about what the person would have wanted, and then you've got multiple different people with their own opinions, and they can't get to grieving, they can't get to honoring that person because they're too busy fighting, right?
Oh gosh, I've seen it so many times. Or you get the call and you show up at the hospital and you're like, you know, if you're going to want to do burial or cremation or, you know, water, and everybody's like, we don't know.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about it.
Yeah. I think so many people feel like they don't want to burden their families and talk about it so much because they don't want to make them sad. But the reality is that it's a wonderful gift if you can tell your loved ones what you want. And I would, in my time in hospice, as folks approach the end of their life, I would see them be more willing to talk about it, but their families weren't always willing to listen. And so it's such an important conversation to have, but I get that it's a hard conversation to have. So I love that there's these games, a way to sort of make it kind
really
of fun.
Cool.
I love this. I'm going to have to do some searching on that and purchase some of these. So thank you for sharing that.
And we'll add some of those resources in the show notes.
Sure,
for sure.
Will you tell us about Kermit the dog?
You just can't wait any longer.
I can't wait any longer. I need to hear all about Kermit the dog.
Yes,
people that listen to us know that we have three dogs, so we love dogs.
Very often they make their presence known on our episodes because they're loud, and there's one sitting next to Jenny right now. But yeah, tell us, please, all about Kermit.
Kermit the dog is Texas's first certified therapy dog working in funeral care. And I just woke him up and I'm getting the look.
Because he heard his name. Yes.
That's my name.
Yep.
And he's your dog.
And I joined forces. Say again?
He's your dog, correct?
He is my dog.
Yes, yes.
We joined forces almost 3 years ago. He was a 4 month old puppy when I found him on petfinder.com. Mm. And I was like, that's a dog you can talk to about death, because he had two different colored eyes and a cute puppy grin. And I rushed to Waco the next morning, which was 2 hours away from Austin, and adopted a dog. I didn't know if he was going to be good for this. It wasn't the intention for him to be a therapy dog. When I got him, he was from anxiety and depression issues, and it had been recommended to me by my therapist and my primary care physician to look into getting a support dog. Mm. And I kept blowing it off, like, you know, people are taking advantage of these things now, but there is a genuine need out there for certain things. And
sure.
Kermit genuinely improved my quality of life.
Wow.
And he was so good when I got him that I just continued the training, and we got certified as a therapy dog when he hit 1 year of age.
Wow. And so how does a therapy dog work within the funeral service industry? What are some of the things that he does? How does he kind of partner with you?
Day in the life of Kermit.
Oh, yeah.
Day in the life of Kermit the dog. Make your mom get out of bed and feed you.
So far, Kermit sounds like our dogs.
Yep.
Yeah. But beyond that, he travels with me all day long. So if I get a death call, he comes with me. If it's a hospital or a hospice. We have prior arrangements at certain ones that he accompanies me in, and will either stay with the nursing staff and give them a reprieve, or, he'll come to the room with me if the family's there. So he, just another softening presence. You know how people react to dogs.
Yeah, for sure.
It immediately breaks tension in the room. I mean, unless you're scared of dogs.
Sure. Yes. But overall,
He just brings a calmness. Like, one of the more earlier interactions that he had with a family member was, he was sitting on a couch in the arrangement room at the place that I was working, and the widow and her two children were making arrangements for the widow's husband, who she was going to cremate, and she just kept wringing her hands and looking down. She wouldn't communicate with me, and her daughters were having to speak for her, and Kermit made his way to her and sat next to her and just leaned his head over onto her lap. Aww. And just sat there. And it took her like 5 seconds before her hands stopped pulling at each other and dropped to the dog. And as she began to pet him, her shoulders relaxed and she made eye contact with me. And then she began to give us feedback, like, I'd like to see a blue urn, or, wow. You know, if I was asking questions about where he went, you know, where he grew up, you know, so I could help them build the obit. And she started participating in that. But the whole first 30 minutes she was there, I thought we weren't going to get anything out of her. But yeah, that was just one of the breakthrough moments that I had with him early on.
That's brilliant. It makes so much sense.
Gravitate.
Yeah, that's what these, you know, these therapy dogs, the emotional support dogs, they have an instinct. They just get it and they can feel the emotion and they know what people need. And I've seen their presence do amazing things, but I've never thought to connect that to the funeral service industry. It really is quite brilliant.
Yeah.
Are there others? I know he was the first one in Texas. Is this starting to sort of take off a lot? Are there more of these dogs that are starting to work in the industry, or are you still pretty much the only kind of duo there?
There has been a great surge of them. And I really feel like Kermit's media presence and attention that he got helped, inspire other funeral professionals to bring this offering to their families through their firms. Something I would try to teach people early on is don't, because it was crazy at first. Everybody was like, bring your dog to work day, you know?
Yes.
And I'm like, no, you guys, you got to go through training.
Right,
you
know, right.
Your dog is a representative of your firm. This is like an employee. So for dogs that haven't been through the training, they're called comfort dogs. And they can't be insured or anything like that. But when they go through the training and they're certified, you can get them insured. You know they're going to behave a certain way. If funeral homes couldn't go through all of that, there are great resources in the community like the Dog Alliance, which is who we did our training through, and they're out of Cedar Park, Texas. And the Dog Alliance, basically they train Hounds for Heroes. They have other programs like that. But they can hire these nonprofits to come in and provide this service to their families instead of going through the training, of their own dog.
That's awesome.
It's such a cool element. And as I said earlier, it's really cool for us to hear this. You know, we're both committed to end of life care, death care, and we love dogs. So like we just jumped all over this element of your business and your work. I wanted to ask, for Kermit, well, what you had just described when you first started explaining the day in the life of Kermit, as a healthcare worker myself, I can visually see what you were describing when you show up to do a removal and you're there and Kermit's there and he's with the nurses or the healthcare workers and they're getting a little bit of respite, a little bit of brevity in the face of having to watch a patient die. So it's a really amazing element. I look at that compared to what we normally see. Usually a male shows up in a, you know, a stuffy suit from a funeral home with no dog. You know, it's very somber, picks up the decedent and leaves. Compared to what you're offering and showing up with Kermit, it's just such a different, it's such a great thing. You painted a really nice picture as you were describing it. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I applaud you for all that you're doing. How can folks find you? What's your sort of preferred way for people to kind of navigate towards you and what it is that you're doing?
The greatest resource of me right now is on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of educational posts with my experiences being a modern mortician. So my Instagram handle is @mod_mortician.
Great.
But all of those links can be found at themodernmortician.com.
Okay, great. So we will put those links in our show notes and I will also tag you on Instagram, which is where I found you. So you have a wonderful presence there on Instagram. But thank you so much.
This has been awesome.
Yeah, like I am just so blown away by everything that you're doing. You know, reading about it was one thing, but to hear you talk about it with your passion is so inspiring and makes me really excited for what's going to be coming down the pike in the field of the funeral service industry. So thank you so, so much. I'm sure as we have sort of deeper conversations, we'll sort of want to circle back to you to explore things in more detail too. So maybe we'll reach out and be able to sort of do a part two to our conversation at some point in the future too.
Would love that. Thank you guys.
Great. And if we're ever in Texas, I would like to find you and meet you and Kermit the dog.
Well, listen, I have always wanted to go to Austin. I'm a musician. My other life, I was a musician. So I love I've heard really good things about the music scene in Austin. So now we have another reason to go, Jenny. Absolutely.
Well, if you're a fan of The Cure is coming to town for ACL in October. So,
oh, wow.
I don't know. If you're of that generation or not.
We are of that generation, and someone is turning 40in October.
October is a big birthday month for me. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah.
We might be showing up at your place, Melissa.
Right on. Bring it.
We really cannot thank you enough for hanging out with us. I wanted to point everybody to, once again, Maud_Mortician on Instagram. Give her a follow. Go check it out. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And we will stay in touch. We'll stay in touch on Instagram, and I'm sure our paths will cross again.
Excellent. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Melissa.
Take care.
Oh, my gosh. How awesome was Melissa?
Amazing. I'm really happy that we did that. And I'm so thankful and grateful to her for coming on. And she accommodated us last minute because we had a last minute lacrosse practice added during a time where I was teaching. It just kind of made our night sort of frenzied. So she was very accommodating.
Frenzied is a good word.
Yeah, it was very frenzied.
But she was absolutely the highlight of the day. She was so great. And, I'm so happy that it was Melissa Unfred who was our first interview.
Yeah, talking about really death and sort of death education and death awareness. And look, when we launched the podcast, when you convinced me to do the podcast, when you were twisting my arm.
Am I gonna ever live that down at all?
Well, you weren't the one that said, you're stupid if you don't do a podcast.
Yes, somebody else.
But I am very thankful for someone saying that to us. But this was sort of the crux of it, right? Is that here's an opportunity for us to have some conversations about the things that are really important to us, including conversations around death and grief and certainly other stuff as well. So it was really fitting. And I'm so eager to see what the conversations are that come out of that interview, because I think, you know, it's kind of pushing sort of the envelope there, maybe edging into some stuff that is really uncomfortable for people. And here it is. I hope people lean into that.
Lean into it.
Lean into that. And I acknowledge it can be uncomfortable. We're talking about thinking about sort of changing or being open to doing things differently. And that's scary and uncomfortable. But when you lean into that space, really sometimes something amazing can come out of that.
Absolutely.
And that's actually been the theme this week. I think so often for me in my field, there winds up being themes. It's not like folks walk in and I'm like, hi, patient X. Today's theme is everyone this week is talking about blah. But a theme that came up a lot this week was this notion of kind of leaning into it, doing things that you don't really want to do that scare you.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the first week of classes for one of my terms. And so many students shared in their sort of introductions to each other about how their internships were maybe something that they were scared of doing. They didn't want to do. It wasn't what they would have selected, but they learned a lot and they grew. And for some of them, they really fell in love with things. So I'm hoping folks are open-minded, and I'm really eager to see kind of what discussions happen as a result of this, you know, both face-to-face discussions with folks and online discussions. So definitely let's chat after you hear today's episode.
Yeah, let us know what your thoughts are. She brought up so many very cool things, so many innovative ways to honor somebody that has just passed away.
Yeah,
in your family,
and I think
just
really
died. I'm sorry, Jenny.
Oh, sorry.
No colloquialisms.
Yes,
In particular was all the things she taught us about green burials, the aquamation, the aqua cremation. That stuff was amazing. And I can't explain how great it was to hear all about Kermit.
Yeah, and I really could see, I could see that, you know, working, part of my history is I have done psychotherapy counseling in nursing homes, in assisted living facilities, in rehab centers. So I know what it's like to walk into those buildings and in hospitals. And I know how the removal process typically goes and what that feeling is. I also know what happens when a therapy dog comes in, and how the mood changes. It also changes when like elementary school kids come in. Little kids and dogs do, they're magical. They are magical, especially for people that are sick or that are elders. And so to think about combining those two, you know, sort of the magic, the lightness that happens when there's a therapy dog with the sort of end of life removal of a body after death is truly brilliant. And I can, it's just like puzzle pieces coming together. So,
go check out,
I want to find out the other dog. I want to see what dogs are doing this in Massachusetts, and I want to go meet them.
When I was looking at Melissa's website, I think she had a couple of links to a few stories, news articles where it did highlight, some of the other dogs. I think one of the other dogs' name was Lulu, maybe out of New York or something. So there's a couple other news articles out there detailing the idea of therapy dogs in end-of-life care, death care. But please go check out Melissa's website and look for...
And her Instagram page.
Yeah.
She's really, she's one of those folks that's really active on Instagram in a really educational, informative, fun way. So she's a good person to sort of follow.
We'll give that website URL in just a moment. But I wanted to say, check out the video of Kermit. He's so fun to... He just looks like a dog that you want to snuggle. He just really does.
Are there dogs that you don't want to snuggle?
Well... No, yeah, for us, not really. I'm even, you know what? You and I've had this conversation. I'm sort of a bigger dog person, right? Just in general, and I just kind of shy away from the smaller dogs, like the lap dogs. But we were at, I was at an appointment a couple of years ago, and the person I was visiting had this tiny little terrier type lap dog. He couldn't have been more than like 4 pounds, and I fell in love with this dog. So, so you're right. I don't think there is a dog that I wouldn't want to snuggle with. So,
all right. Well, thank
you. Do you have anything else, Jenny?
No, just let's talk about this because I kind of feel like it's the beginning of a larger conversation here.
I agree. Let us know your thoughts. Okay, everybody, that is going to do it for today. Thank you so very much for listening. Please go check out themodernmortician.com. Give Melissa some love. Check out her Instagram, mod_mortician. That can be found on Instagram. Also, she referenced a website, greenburialcouncil.org. Go check them out for more information on green burials. And you can get more information on Changing Perspectives by following us on Facebook at Changing Perspectives Podcast and on Instagram at Changing Perspectives Blog. You can check out our website by going to changingperspectivesblog.com or send us an email to changingpodcast@gmail.com. Go ahead and subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode, and we will see you next time. So bye, Jenny.
Bye, Jenny.
Changing Perspectives podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Dizzy Bird Studios, Whitman, Massachusetts. Visit Dizzy Bird Studios on Facebook, facebook.com/DizzyBirdStudios.